Welcome to the Business Isn't Usual podcast by Right Way. I'm your host, Stuart Wilkinson. Today is the third episode of our election series special, where we're catching up with Green List MP, Chloe Swarbrick. Chloe is the small business spokesperson for the Green Party, and she's also running in the Auckland Central electorate seat this year. We start by talking about Auckland and not only the economic effects of COVID, but we discuss what the changing nature of work might mean for businesses. So more people working from home, more use of technologies, and how people might need to adapt to these changes. We also look at a wider field and think about how we can build our businesses back to pre-COVID levels and how we can do things a bit differently to make them more agile and make them better for the wider community. We recorded this episode at the Green Party HQ in Auckland, so there is a bit of background noise. And also, Chloe had to leave the podcast a bit abruptly as she was getting whisked off to the transport announcement the Green Party were making that day. So we apologise for the abrupt ending. We hope you enjoy this podcast. If you do, please subscribe on the platform where you're listening to this podcast and check out Right Way and all our social media channels to keep up to date with all the news and content from Right Way. Chloe, welcome to the podcast.
Kia ora, thank you for having me.
And our first ever in-person guest, which is a big start for us. So we'll see how this goes.
It's pretty special.
It's very special.
It's nice to be in person as opposed to it's weird seeing people in 3D, not just on Zoom.
I kind of underestimated the amount of dynamic this actually gives to the conversation rather than just a video on the screen.
Well, I think particularly when you've got that slight lag, there is definitely a pause to give people a moment to respond. So there's not. I've also kind of found it as we've gone out of level 3 and lockdown here in Auckland, that as we've been able to campaign in person and meet people in person, and also we had our first in-person debate actually at a pub at Brothers Beer in Cityworks Depot this past weekend. It was next level. Just the
really?
Passion. Yeah, but I mean, potentially you could say that people have been really pent up.
Yeah, true.
But the flip side of it is definitely that you really do respond to an audience and you're able to get cues. You know, there's that classic adage that 70% of cues are nonverbal.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very difficult to get those. I mean, through the likes of Zoom, you can get slight cues, but nothing the same as the kind of energy that you receive back from people.
Yeah, and it's, as you said, it's a lot of the nonverbal stuff, isn't it? So the fact you're now on the campaign trail, able to sort of, I guess, meet people and do these sort of meetings and stuff, like what's your vibe, Chloe, especially as I know you're, obviously going for the Auckland Central seat this year, like what's been your take on the effect for businesses and business owners at Auckland Central, but also out on the campaign trail, and what's the feedback you're getting post, coming out of lockdown, but also I guess the economic side now we're going into?
So the kind of experience that I've been having with Auckland Central business owners has very much been, that's Julian Denter, Associate Minister of Transport, is walking past in our Auckland office, the ambient noise folks. But my experience, I live just off of Karangahape Road, so over lockdown I was walking around and supporting as many of those small businesses as I could, having those conversations at the kind of foot of the door, particularly with hospital businesses, of course, but also those essential businesses who could open for kind of retail. And then as we progressed into level 2, have continued those conversations. A lot of the issues seem somewhat similar to where we were at in the first lockdown, but exacerbated in that second lockdown. So here, I think particularly with the massively high rents in Auckland Central, the challenges seem to be those relationships with landlords that have got a bit tense in certain places. Yep. In the first lockdown, there was it was described to me by one small business owner, an owner-operator on High Street, as though in the first lockdown, it was like 100%, team of 5 million, we're all in this. And then in the second lockdown, it kind of turned into 50% of the team, team of 2.5 million.
Yeah.
So people were kind of making decisions to be involved and coming to the table to support, and others not so much.
Yeah.
So I kind of attempted to escalate that through parliamentary processes to get some form of kind of arbitration support for those small businesses. But ultimately, all of these things kind of come down to relationships, right?
Completely agree.
They all come down to relationships. So in that respect, I have been helping in particular a small group of owner-operators in Elliott Stables.
Yep.
And,
Because that was in the press recently about
it's
how
been
challenged
in the press
they've been.
Since the first round as well. But I've been helping them out since March. And with that experience and the kind of escalation of the drama and it kind of going in the media, and also actually the personal guarantees held over all of their heads. Yep. So, you know, even if their business is not particularly going to survive, with also all the Victoria Street Works, the City Rail Link going in, and the fact that nobody's really coming back into the city, because so many people have become accustomed to working from home, which, you know, decimates their foot traffic, as well as international students and students in general not being on campus. Even if they were to, you know, say, well, the business isn't working, I want to kind of wind that down, they've got their personal guarantees and they're locked into a contract for an extended period of time. So helping them navigate that in a way that doesn't escalate or inflame and kind of take everybody down in one go, that's the kind of work that you can do, I guess, as a local representative, is help people navigate that space. But then there's the legal and funding side of it, which is where we attempted to change some of the kind of framework of commercial tenancies, because right now there is quite a massive power imbalance. Also to see if there was some opportunity to provide for a framework to give guidance around what kind of circumstances would make sense to enable the relief of those personal guarantees, but also what it basically ended up coming down to, because politics requires a whole lot of negotiation, not just between stakeholders, but also with three political parties in government this past term. We're established a fund of a few thousand dollars that's available for any kind of parties that would like to go into arbitration and deal with this with their landlord.
You touched on it there, Chloe. Like, I think probably more than anywhere else in the country, Auckland Central is probably seeing a change in how we work, you know, and there's plenty of headlines around, you know, ANZ sort of moving more from work from home, even like in the big corporate space. So for your electorate, and I know for all our listeners, this is not necessarily all about, they're not all in Auckland, but I think it highlights a change in potential of how we work, and it's accelerating that. Like, how have you how, I guess, do you think this is going to change in the what is now the near future, with what is a CBD which was built on everyone coming from all parts of Auckland to work, which now is completely potentially changing?
So disruption is kind of a fact of life, right? It's something that's always occurred throughout human history. It just is somewhat, you know, unfortunate that the circumstances also coincided with the global pandemic and the inability to, you know, have that kind of transitionary time to think and to plan and to invest accordingly. So I guess the real challenge right now is how do we minimize that harm as much as possible, but also how do we innovate and create a new space, you know, what does the future look like? And, you know, because the interesting thing actually about Auckland Central is that it isn't just the city side, it's also Waiheke and Aotea Great Barrier. And I was really fascinated to hear from, I did a kind of walk along a bunch of small businesses, kind of retail and hospital fronts there, and spoke to a number of the owners. And they as well were having dramas with some landlords and some issues there. So commercial tenancies seem to have really come to the fore on it. So too, kind of the lifeline of the wage subsidy, but what happens now? And this takes me to the point of how do we innovate? What does it look like to build a new type of customer base, or is business as we know it going to have to entirely change? And has been interesting talking to, you know, along Ponsonby Road, a number of the hospital businesses that I've visited have said that they have basically just shifted online. And they've managed to, by virtue of social media platforms like Instagram in particular, sell their wares and did all right during that second lockdown. But I don't quite know if anybody understands right now what the future is going to look like in the next several years. But perhaps one of the most exciting things about that is that we get to decide based on what we invest in. And this is a point that I made in a debate last night. We are spending, and everyone keeps saying unprecedented, but it truly is, an unprecedented amount of money right now. And, you know, it rivals what we were doing subsequent to the Great Depression in the 1930s. Do we want to go back to business as usual? I'm not quite sure of that, because I think that it wasn't working particularly well for all too many people. And I'd argue, actually, as somebody who's worked in small business in my past life, that, you know, the support wasn't particularly great there either. So I think, you know, we need to focus on what a far more community-focused, localized economy looks like, particularly when we've actually been confronted with the reality that we're going to be relying on things like domestic tourism as opposed to international. Yeah. We're going to be relying on customer loyalty in a way that we haven't before because the foot traffic has been reduced. So, you know, how do we come together, knock our heads together and produce policies and a structural environment that's conducive to thriving?
Yeah. And I think picking up on that is, because, you know, I read a lot about sort of the Greens policy and a lot of your documentation. I was listening to your interview that recently you were talking about this idea that this is an opportunity. Like, you know, out of adversity does come opportunity and a chance to relook at things. And as you said, to that story and the theme we're seeing in Auckland Central, it's not just the fact we want to rebuild an economy in different ways, but things are changing in the sense of how we operate.
Yeah.
But
and automation and stuff was already coming down the pipeline.
And we're not more globally connected from a way to do business, but we've also got to recognise, like you said, the trends that who knows when a tourist is going to come back to New Zealand, because that is completely out of our control. I think there is no doubt we have got to make some changes in how we move business to be more sustainable, whether it's through their supply chains, whether it's through emissions, all that sort of aspect. How do you think business owners need to look at that with this overhanging uncertainty, I guess, over it, while making this change to think of their future and make sure we're setting a good foundation for the future, I guess, when it comes to that green sort of stuff?
So I think probably the biggest thing that we can do here is to collaborate. If we kind of dig our heels in and all go back into our corners, then things are not going to end well.
Yeah.
The real lesson for me, actually, from COVID-19, and it was interesting talking to the Mental Health Foundation about this about 2 weeks ago, and they were saying that people who have been historically on the margins have experienced some of the worst mental ill health in the past, particularly 5 to 10 years, have felt as though they have been part of something. It's an experience that everybody in the entire country and actually in the entire world has gone through.
Yeah, true.
So that kind of community experience has really brought to the fore the things that matter. And I think in that is something to grasp in terms of owner-operators and in terms of small businesses, because people are really looking for how we support our local economy and what that means and how we make decisions that are wise and kind of investments. So around how small businesses can kind of, the turn of phrase now, if you had to put it on a bingo card when you're watching debates, is build back better. How are we going to do that? Well, how we're going to do that is have to be responsive in a way that, you know, we already were exponentially having to become because of the requirements of the likes of social media and responding to customer feedback and pivoting and all of those other things. But right now, I think taking those small risks, kind of checking them quite quickly, constantly iterating and testing at the edges of what your business can look like, but also recognizing that you have the opportunity to be actively embedded in a community. And obviously, I also want to recognize that I've spoken a lot about hospo and retail.
Yeah.
It's been interesting as well speaking to those who work in tech, for example.
Yep.
Most of the tech companies that I have spoken to have actually expanded.
They seem to be doing all right.
Yeah. And that could be because a lot of people were just turning to their computers over lockdown. But there's also, you know, a new yearning for connection and for communication. So figuring out that a lot of those fundamentals of human nature remain the same. We still, you know, want someone to love, somewhere to live, and, you know, all of those things that you know, former prime ministers have invoked. But we also live in a very different time, and we value, I think, our place in the world and our identity. So giving people the opportunity to recognise and to lean into that is really useful. And I just finally say, in summing up all of that, small business has always been at the cutting edge of this stuff.
Yeah, true.
It's oftentimes, you know, we talk about, particularly on a, you know, in the likes of the leaders' debates, there's the invocation very regularly of small businesses, when oftentimes the policies being rolled out are helping more of those medium to large scale businesses. But, you know, there's these conversations around things like the living wage, about, you know, standards of waste that's put out there, of kind of the circular economy, of all of those bits and pieces. All of those things I have always seen small businesses at the forefront of.
Yep.
they always are raising the standards, and that in turn filters through the rest of the sector.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think one of the things, Chloe, you mentioned there when you were your own business owner, you talked about that the support for business owners has not been great. And I know in your policies, you've talked a lot around making sure there's more support for business owners. What do you think is missing? And I guess, what does that support look like for you?
So it's very easy to start a business in this country. You know, internationally compared, it's, I think, the easiest to start a limited liability.
Yeah, it's the easiest, it's the fastest. It only takes a day. It's the easiest place, apparently, to incorporate a company in the Western world, anyway.
Yeah, and in that respect, you know, you can say that there's benefits for that, of course, because of the efficacy and the, I mean, people are complaining a lot about the likes of the RMA, understandably, but we seem to have got some of our legislation in our back end working all right. The bureaucracy of registering a company doesn't seem to be all too clunky. So I think that it's actually about what happens from that point. Because here I can speak from definitely my own personal experience. And the first business that I started, I was 18. It was in men's fashion, actually, with my ex-partner, who's still a really good mate of mine. And that was just honestly far more fruitful and rewarding and education laden than doing a BCom ever could have been, because we had no idea what the hell we were doing. And we decided that the first business that we would start would be in fashion, the most seasonal of all, and requiring, you know, knowledge of complex kind of supply chains, particularly because we're producing actually in New Zealand, so that, you know, increases the price point, as well as the likes of relationships with suppliers and stockists and, you know, product tracing lines, all of those kinds of things. And then you add on top of that, like, the marketing and the back end around accounting and all of these bits and pieces we had to teach ourselves. So I think that greater support for people actually recognizing what their role could be, how they can bring that passion to life in a way that isn't just, here you go, you're thrown into the deep end, it's as easy as starting a business, because it never is. It's far more complicated than that. So those kinds of wraparound supports. There also is, and you find this kind of kaupapa reflected in our green policy, is greater support for the likes of buying New Zealand made and supporting New Zealand businesses. And, you know, we used to have a really staunch, like, when I was growing up, I remember going to the warehouse and, like, seeing the stickers on things. And, you know, there was a real sense of pride and identity in that. When you're talking about goods as well, the opportunity to do product origin kind of tracing on that, and we've done a lot of work in that space. Gareth Hughes, in particular, an outgoing Green MP, worked across the Parliament to end up getting a piece of legislation passed by consensus for country of origin labelling for food products.
Yes.
So all of those kinds of things help to build and establish a culture whereby people take pride in what they buy and the services and goods that they end up, you know, putting their money towards, seeing that more so as a bid for the kind of world that they want to live in. And that's where the real value that we have as, you know, New Zealand businesses is that we know New Zealanders like nobody else.
Yep.
So being able to support that localism and that community connection is really critically important. But that then potentially raises, you know, the perennial so-called problem, but I'm really interested in investigating whether you think it's a problem, that, you know, New Zealand businesses get to a certain level and, you know, comparatively we spend nowhere like our comparable jurisdictions on research and development, kind of per capita or in the small business space, on innovation. And we've done, you know, I've been involved as small business spokesperson with Stuart Nash and others in government to roll out, you know, tax credits and otherwise to incentivise research and development. And I think that is critically important. But I also think that there's a bit of a presumption that perhaps people, you know, there's the kind of people just want the car and the boat and the house
and the badge.
And they're chill. And they're all good, you know. I've hired 10 people and I've done my bit. And there seems to be laden inherently in that kind of critique that people need to want more than that. But I don't know if they need to want more than that. I think that that actually is potentially one version of sustainability.
Yeah, I think, I remember there was a survey done by Zero. Now, this would have been 3.5 years ago. And I remember part of their research, and they went out to a bunch of business owners, and the feedback came back that only 1 in 5 business owners wanted to grow. And the reason being wasn't from a financial point of view that they were comfortable. It was, I'm as stressed as another is, I'm away from my family enough as it is, so why would I want that?
Yep.
Like, more than that, I've got, I find staff hard enough to manage. So I think there is a huge part around support that, you know, business is hard.
Mm.
And like you said, like, people go to university and they come out and they're none the wiser on what business is.
You know, the academic side of things, but not the grind, not, and the relationships.
What it actually involves. So I think there is a support thing. And, you know, a lot of business owners, you know, from what we see, they are very good at something.
Totally.
I'm a craftsman or whatever it might be, and I've got a passion about something and doing something a bit different. Mm. But that doesn't automatically mean you've got all this stuff. So the support is massively important.
Yeah. I mean, the way that my old man put it, and I think that he was just totally ripping off something that he read on the internet, but it's like you've got this, there's a fisherman fishing off the coast of, you know, some beautiful place, and he's catching the fish, and this dude in a big boat rocks up and goes, hey, you know, if you decided to invest, you could buy a big boat, and then you could hire some people, and then you could do all of these things and, you know, escalate your business, and then one day you could retire really wealthy. And the guy was like, well, why would I do that? You know, I'm doing what I want to do if I retired right now, that is living a sustainable life that's broadly in harmony with community and the natural environment and all those other things. And I don't think that's at all an attack or whatever on aspiration. It's just to say that I think there is perhaps some patronization of people who are quite okay with and should be okay with contributing in their own way to their community and employing a few local people and doing good things, producing high quality goods and services.
Yeah.
And that is the part, the actual cornerstone, the backbone of our economy that we don't properly acknowledge enough, I think.
Well, and I think to your point, Chloe, is that because business is so tough, if you don't find purpose and meaning in what you're doing, and it doesn't matter if you're like trying to make the best cup of coffee in the world or create this
Coffee, those margins. I also was involved in running a small business, a small little cafe once, and holy moly, I've got a lot to say for those who work in coffee.
But you know, like, it's got to be driven off passion, because it's hard. And I think you know, what we're, you know, with everything that's been sort of documented of what might happen, and but it's definitely gonna be tough, is you need that drive and that passion of what you do. Yep, there's all the sort of peripheral stuff of staff and the accounting stuff and tax, which is often confronting and intimidating, but you've got to enjoy what you do, because otherwise, and it doesn't matter if it's you're employed or if you if you have your business, but you better enjoy it.
Big time. I actually have, it'll come as no surprise that I'm a major in philosophy, but I have one of the things that has really grounded me over the years as things have been really tumultuous, whether it's in business or in politics or before that even, is I'm by no means religious, but I really enjoyed looking at different religions around the world, the cultural approaches that they take to problems and issues. And inside of Buddhism, there's a notion of life is suffering, which sounds really bloody depressing.
Yeah.
But then you start to unpack it and you realize that regardless of whatever you do, things are going to be hard.
Yeah.
And when you realize that, you then realize that you have the opportunity to do things that are hard, that you hate, or hard that you find passion in.
Yeah.
And this is where as well I really drive it home to particularly younger people, because, you know, I'm asked to speak at all of these kind of highfalutin, quote unquote, inspirational things nowadays, and, you know, often go up after people have been told, if you find the thing that you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And I just have to get up there and call BS on it, because it's completely untrue. Anybody who has ever found the thing that they loved has worked harder than they've ever worked. And, you know, it might not exist yet. You have to grind to create it from, you know, point nil. And that's where you find your meaning and your purpose.
Yeah. And I think, you know, talking about that grind, I think what, you know, talking about the current situation of business owners, it doesn't matter how, you know, focus you're on your business, whatever you want to call it, but your business isn't just the only part of your life. And I think the one thing I think of that And Zero have been, you know, Craig Hudson's been a bit of a, you know, a leader in the sense of on this, on the mental health aspect of what business owner experience, you know, through this pandemic, of the uncertainty and the fact that if the business doesn't do A, then it affects my B, which is my home life, and not just financially, but also emotionally and stuff. So, you know, it's about support.
God forbid we acknowledge emotions in the business sector. But that's the thing, right? It is all connected.
And it is hard. And I think, you know, we are going to get, you know, through a hard period of time. And we've talked a lot to our clients that, you know, you've got to reach out and get support. You know, you're not alone, but business can be a very lonely place, can't it?
It can, particularly when you feel like you're pushing everything uphill all by yourself, because everything's impossible until it's been done.
Correct. Now, a bit of a tact. I want to talk about some tax stuff. We are an accounting firm, so we love talking about tax. Why do you think every time the T word is spoken in an election, we all go a bit silly?
There's a massive allergic reaction. I don't know. It's interesting, right? I think it's got a lot to do with, again, I talk a lot about culture and structure as the two different kind of spheres or facets for change to be brought about inside of society. Structure is those things that are supposedly the bread and butter of officials and the so-called bureaucracy and politicians. It's, you know, your legislation, regulation, taxation, incentives, subsidies, contracts, procurement, treaties, domestically and internationally. But the far more interesting side of things, I think, is culture. And culture, by definition, from a design thinking perspective, is a shared set of values. What's really fascinating about that is how we can have very diverse societies come together with people from different life experiences, from people with different cultural backgrounds, that being family or geographically or whatever else. It's a shared set of values that unites us. So different touch points for changing culture that is ultimately conducive to structural change. It's things like education.
Yep.
Education, however, takes quite a long time, particularly if you're looking at intergenerational stuff through, you know, introducing something in the curriculum like civics education or New Zealand history in schools or Te Reo Māori or whatever else. You've also got media, including social media. Interesting thing about media is, you know, you mentioned mental health before, and the kinds of ways that we've changed to talk about mental health and acknowledge it and be sensitive about it is quite a marked change to where we were at 10, 20 years ago. And inherent in that, again, is the response of structural change, of needing to recognise that people need greater support therein. Then you've also got things like collective action and kind of community building and innovation and disruption and creativity and collaboration. So I think that we have really, I was born in 1994, but interesting thing about that, I mean, it's the year Kurt Cobain died, but it's also, you know, very much in the shadow and the consequences of massive disruptions in not just New Zealand and, you know, 1984, but, you know, Margaret Thatcher in the 1980s, Nixon in the US, and effectively a far more individualized way of looking at the world. That kind of cultural ramification is everybody going, I'm here to fight my corner. It's about me. It's about my family. It's about me and what I can do to progress myself, as opposed to going, how do we come together to build a better tomorrow? And that is kind of, in a nutshell, broad brushstroke, the individualistic versus collectivistic kind of approaches to the world. And they are, I do think, a spectrum. But taxation is effectively a manifestation of the social contract. The social contract is, in turn, manifest in government. We think now of government as a sector that is over there, and it's professionalised, and it's done primarily by people with law degrees, which is not at all how New Zealand government used to work. We used to have far more farmers and teachers. I mean, we do have a woodworker in the name of Jerry Rowley, who's still there. But we have completely changed the way that we see our House of Representatives. And I think that that's a problem. Because democracy is us. It can be us in particular. It's for the people, by the people, of the people. And in that respect, I think, you know, people ask me a lot nowadays to talk about particularly youth apathy in politics. I think one of the main reasons for that is that people don't see themselves reflected in their politics. So what I'm bringing this all back down to, right, is that, you know, government is seen as an intervening force, but in fact it should represent the will of the people. And it, in that respect, is kind of that balancing force, for lack of a better word, that is able to do things like ensure that everybody has the opportunity to not only survive, but to thrive. And that is the point of basic redistribution.
Yeah.
You know, because without that, you end up with ever perpetuating, ever expanding mass inequality.
Yeah.
And the, I guess the thing that drives me the most mad about all of this is the presumption that we can somehow do things like address child poverty or address escalating house prices, particularly here in Auckland, or address mass inequality without talking about tax.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I did, and this is, I think, just, you know, in summary of all of that, the massive divergence between the idea of, what was I talking about? Totally lost it. No, that's all right. Are you guys leaving now? Yeah. I should probably go with them if that's all right.
That's fine.
Yeah, cool. Sorry, mate.
That's right. So just for everyone, we're recording in the Green Office party. So Chloe, thank you very much. That could have conversation, I think, could go on for about another hour. But no, thanks very much for your time and thanks for coming on the podcast.
No, thank you so much. I apologise for cutting it short, my friend.
Thanks a lot. See ya. Bye.
Bye.